bogus money. It's been proven throughout history. It deceives you while it bleeds you, as it leads you down to tyranny.
The American Revolution was fought over the issue of money. The colonies created their own paper money and paid it into circulation on public projects until enough taxes could be collected in gold and silver coin to buy back the paper. Colonial scrip, as it was called, was used as a temporary emergency measure to meet the demands of commerce. The rapid growth and prosperity of the colonies attracted the attention of the Bank of England, a private corporation chartered by the British Crown in 1694 and granted an exclusive monopoly to create money out of nothing and loan it into circulation at interest. Having gained control over British industry through frequent depressions caused by manipulating the quantity of paper money, the Bank of England sought to exploit the colonies by seizing control over their money. The British Parliament had no power over the colonies until the campaign by the Bank of England to nullify the laws granting the colonies the right to create their own money, making it compulsory that the colonies borrow their money at interest from the Bank of England. This was the true cause of the War for Independence. Benjamin Franklin put it this way.
The colonies would have gladly borne the little tax on tea and other matters, had it not been that England took away from the colonies their money.
When the monetary provisions of the Constitution were being drafted, there were heated debates over whether or not to grant Congress power to emit bills of credit, in other words, print paper money. The colonies knew the agonies of inflation. Paper money that does not maintain its value when it is not an honest claim for wealth, such as gold and silver coin. Oliver Ellsworth, a delegate from Connecticut, who later became this nation's third Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, said,
"This is a favorable moment to shut and bar the door against paper money. The mischief of the various experiments which have been made are now fresh in the public mind and have excited the disgust of all the respectable parts of America."
Roger Sherman, also a delegate from Connecticut and author of the gold and silver coin provision of the Constitution, wrote a scathing condemnation of paper money entitled A Caveat.
Caveat means warning.
Against injustice, in which he said,
"If what is used as a medium of exchange is fluctuating in its value, it is no better than unjust weights and measures, both of which are condemned by the laws of God and man, and therefore the longest and most universal custom could never make the use of such a medium either lawful or reasonable."
And so the framers of the Constitution stipulated a monetary system of gold and silver to be coined and regulated in value by Congress, and prohibited the government from issuing paper money, as stated in Article 1, Sections 8 and 10 of the Constitution.
Congress shall have power to coin money and regulate the value thereof. No state shall make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debts.
With an honest money system established in the United States, no nation would be able to maintain a dishonest money system for long, and this posed a serious threat to the money power centered in London. The Revolutionary War did not end the battle over who would control the money system of America. The battle continued until the money power of England and Europe and their associates in America achieved victory when Congress, anxious to go home for the Christmas holiday, passed the Federal Reserve Act on December 23rd, 1789. 1913. Congressman Charles A. Lindbergh Sr., father of the famed aviator, told Congress after the vote,
"When the president signs this act, the invisible government by the money power will be legalized."
And so it was. President Woodrow Wilson signed the act into law, turning over the money system of this nation to a group of private bankers and allowing them to create money simply by making bookkeeping entries, loan it at interest, and take title to real property as collateral. As a result, the citizens of the United States lost control over their money system and their government. The Federal Reserve System is modeled after the Bank of England. Though it consists of 12 regional banks, it functions as the nation's central bank. It is where banks go to borrow money and is appropriately called the banker's bank. The Federal Reserve System is a private corporation owned by foreign and domestic banks and operated for profit. The Bank of England, the Bank of France, the Bank of Italy, the Reichsbank of Germany were all founded as privately owned banks and not as government institutions as their names imply. Remember, the essence of psychological warfare is to confuse the meaning of words and infiltrate the mind with conflicting concepts. The international banking establishment operates on the principles of fractional reserve banking that originated with the goldsmiths long ago. It is based on the dishonest practice of issuing receipts for more gold than is held on deposit. On page 4 of Modern Money Mechanics, published by the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago, it says,
"At one time, bankers were merely middlemen. They made a profit by accepting gold and coins brought to them for safekeeping and lending them to borrowers. But they soon found that the receipts they issued to depositors were being used as a means of payment. These receipts were acceptable as money, since whoever held them could go to the banker and exchange them for metallic money. Then bankers discovered that they could make loans merely by giving borrowers their promises to pay, banknotes. In this way, banks began to create money. More notes could be issued than the gold and coin on hand because only a portion of the notes outstanding would be presented for payment at any one time. Enough metallic money had to be kept on hand, of course, to redeem whatever volume of notes was presented for payment."
And when they did not keep enough gold and silver coin on hand to redeem all notes presented for payment, their fraud was exposed and short bankers were hung from tall trees. Under fractional reserve banking, banks create money whenever they grant a loan. It is the act of borrowing that causes it to come into existence. Banks lend money that did not exist until they loaned it. It is a true feat of magic. Banks create money by monetizing debt, the debts of government, business, and the public. Banks literally create money out of less than nothing because a debt is a sum of money due. It is not possible to pay a debt with a debt. And yet, this is what America and the world is using as money. Federal Reserve notes are evidence of debt the U.S. government owes to the owners of the Federal Reserve, the payment of which is guaranteed by the collateral of all property and income of all U.S. citizens. How the U.S. government borrows money from the Federal Reserve is not much different from the Abbott and Costello comedy sketch in their movie Buck Privates, where Bud Abbott wants to borrow $50 from Lou Costello. Listen to their routine and compare it with the explanation of how the Federal Reserve works its magic that follows.
Do me a favor, loan me $50. Smitty, I can't. I can't lend you $50.
Oh, yes, you can.
No, I can't. All I got is $40, that's all.
All right, give me the $40 and you owe me $10.
Okay. I owe you $10.
That's right.
How come I owe you $10?
Well, what did I ask you for?
$50.
And how much did you give me?
$40.
Well, you owe me $10.
That's right. Well, you owe me $40.
Now, don't change the subject.
I'm not changing the subject. You're trying to change my finances. Come on now, give me my $40.
All right, there's your $40.
Okay.
Well, give me the $10 you owe me.
I'm paying you on account.
On account?
On account. I don't know how I owe it to you.
That's the way you feel about it? It's the last time I'll ever ask you for the loan of $50.
Wait a minute, Smitty. How can I loan you $50 now? All I have is $30.
Well, give me the $30 and you owe me $20.
Okay, this is getting worse all the time. First I owe him $10, now I owe him $20.
Well, why do you run yourself into debt?
I'm not running in, you're pushing me.
I can't help it if you can't handle your finances. I do all right with my money.
Hey, you're doing all right with mine too.
Now, wait a minute. I asked you for a loan of $50, you gave me $30. So you owe me $20. $20 and $30 is $50.
No.
The U.S. government borrows money from the Federal Reserve using the same kind of logic and manipulation of words and numbers as the Abbott and Costello comedy routine. When the U.S. government needs to borrow money, the Treasury creates a bond, which is a fancy word for an IOU, and promises to pay a specified amount of money at a specified interest on a specified date. This bond is evidence of debt, just as an IOU is evidence of debt. This interest-bearing debt is the foundation for this nation's money supply, and its payment is guaranteed by the collateral of all property and income of all U.S. citizens. The Federal Reserve buys this debt simply by making a bookkeeping entry for the amount and writing a check against no funds, and then converts it into paper currency and checkbook money. The U.S. Bureau of Engraving prints the paper currency in whatever denominations ordered by the Federal Reserve and charges about 2 cents for each note, regardless of the denomination, which the Federal Reserve pays for by making another bookkeeping entry and writing another bad check. In effect, the Federal Reserve lends the U.S. government its own credit, our credit, and then charges interest on it. Every dollar created by the Federal Reserve system is debt for the citizens of the United States, which the central bank collects interest on, in addition to the interest from the bond created by the Treasury that put this magic money-making machine in motion. And it gets worse. The Federal Reserve inflates the amount of the bond in order to make even more loans of imaginary dollars and collect more interest on an investment that costs nothing. Under fractional reserve banking, the amount of money a bank can create is limited by the reserve ratio, or fraction, that it is required to maintain. For example, when the reserve ratio is 10 to 1, a bank can create and loan $10 for each dollar held in reserve and charge interest on it. While the reserves of the goldsmith were gold, the reserves of the Federal Reserve is paper. Nothing more than bookkeeping entries that are a record of debt. The absurdity of the situation is that if there were no debts, there would be no money, since every dollar of paper currency and checkbook money is loaned into circulation. And in order to pay the interest, there has to be another loan, because the banking system only creates the principal and not the interest. In fact, the interest can never be paid because it is not possible to return to the bank more dollars than were created, making it inevitable that the Federal Reserve banking system acquire title to all wealth in the nation. This is exactly what the framers of the Constitution intended to prevent when they stipulated a monetary system of gold and silver coin and prohibited the government from issuing paper money. Because a nation that uses money based on debt can never be free of debt.
Paper money, paper money. It's a federal trick without a treat. It's the source of all inflation and the reasons why your ends don't meet.
The only source of inflation is the Federal Reserve Banking System, consisting of the 12 Federal Reserve Banks, dominated by the Federal Reserve Bank of New York and the nation's commercial banks. Increasing the amount of currency and checkbook money increases inflation. Creating new dollars reduces the value of all dollars, resulting in higher prices. By manipulating the quantity of created dollars, the purchasing power of every dollar is altered. The expansion and contraction of an artificial money supply produces the cycles of prosperity and depression that have long plagued society. Depressions are the result of private bankers reducing the money supply by tightening credit and withdrawing currency, causing a drop in prices, unemployment, and foreclosure of property. This mechanism is premeditated theft. The purpose of the Federal Reserve Act that was given to the public at the time was that it would prevent panics, crashes, and depressions. What the public was not told was that the nation's leading bankers engineered those very events to encourage the public to demand what the bankers wanted. The strategy used is a classic example of Hegelian dialectics, a method to bring about change in a three-step process. The first step is to create a problem. What caused the panics, crashes, and depressions that led to the Federal Reserve Act was the same thing that later caused the crash of 1929 and the Great Depression. Manipulating the amount of credit and paper money, just like the goldsmith of old had done. The second step to what amounts to crisis management is to create opposition to the problem, an opposing force that will serve as a catalyst for action. For example, create anxiety and fear in the public so that they demand that government do something. The third step is to offer the solution to the problem that will lead to a predetermined goal, thus bringing about change that would have been impossible to impose on people without proper psychological conditioning. By causing emotional stress and mental confusion, judgment is impaired and suggestibility increased. Under these conditions, people can be manipulated into accepting something that is not in their best interest. This was the case with events that led to the Federal Reserve Act, which placed control of America's money system in the hands of private bankers. Thomas Jefferson warned against doing this when he said,
"If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issue of their currency, first by inflation and then by deflation, the banks and corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all property until their children wake up homeless on the cotton that their fathers conquered."
When people conducted all business with gold and silver coin, it was a final transaction where payment was made on the spot, settling debts without delay. All paper currency was redeemable in gold or silver coin, thus conditioning the public to believe that the bank's promise to pay in wealth was as good as gold. By calling gold and silver money, and then calling banknotes money, the two blended together in people's minds so that gradually, over a period of time, the difference between them was erased from public memory. A promise to pay money substituted for lawful money. until the promise was removed. Exchanging paper currency is an incomplete transaction until payment is made in gold or silver coin. Until then, it is both credit and debt. A record of a specific amount of money to be paid or received. Credit, which is deferred payment, and debt, which is a sum of money due, are the same thing, which is hidden by deceptive double-entry bookkeeping, where a debt becomes an asset by calling it a credit. Paper money that redeems nothing only appears to have value because it can be exchanged for things of value. When a piece of paper representing debt is exchanged for wealth, someone has been robbed. Paper money expropriates wealth from one person, then from another, then from another, and on, until the last person to get it will be stuck with it. What the first user, the bank, gets for nothing, the last user will get nothing for. The sole function of paper money that is not 100% redeemable in gold or silver coin is to get things without paying for them. Those who issue and control bank credit as money get everything for nothing. Bank credit is a device for confiscating wealth using magic with numbers, where numbers of nothing are exchanged for things of substance and value. This grand theft occurs in full view, unnoticed, because the public has been made an accessory to the crime by accepting pieces of paper with numbers on them in place of lawful money, not knowing the difference between the two.
Paper money, worthless money, is the nation's curse since times of old. Things won't ever get no better till we make the Fed give back our gold.
Under fractional reserve banking, the amount of credit a bank can create is tied to the wealth on deposit for which the currency can be redeemed. This limitation was removed when gold was confiscated from the public to protect the currency system based on that gold. During the Great Depression of the 1930s, people who had gold on deposit in the banks wanted the banks to honor their contract to redeem the paper currency for gold. The fraudulent nature of fractional reserve banking was at risk of being exposed because there was not enough gold on deposit in the banks to redeem all Federal Reserve notes issued promising payment in gold. On March 6, 1933, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, by executive proclamation, declared a national emergency and closed down the banking system for 2 days on the recommendation of the Board of Directors of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. On March 9th, Congress passed the Emergency Banking Act, declaring a national emergency and conferring on the President the extraordinary authority of the War Powers Act and the Trading with the Enemy Act of October 6, 1917, amended to place all money matters of American citizens under its jurisdiction. It became illegal for U.S. citizens to own gold under penalty of up to a $10,000 fine and or up to 10 years imprisonment. People turned in their gold and gold certificates in exchange for Federal Reserve notes of created dollars based on debt which bore a promise of redemption in lawful money. The circulation of gold coins and redemption of paper currency for gold ended, leaving silver dollars as the only lawful money available. Silver was eventually eliminated from the money system, leaving the American people with a totally debauched money system of irredeemable paper currency and copper nickel-clad tokens that represent a debt owed to the owners of the Federal Reserve banking system, the payment of which is guaranteed by the collateral of all property and income of all U.S. citizens. When banks cannot honor their contract to redeem their notes for gold or silver coin, they are, in fact, bankrupt. The contract between the people and the Federal Reserve, printed on each banknote, promising to pay in lawful money, was invalidated because the system went bankrupt and because the amended version of the Trading with the Enemy Act of 1917 placed all U.S. citizens in the category of enemy. And no contract is considered valid between enemies. American citizens were declared to be the enemy by their own government, for indeed they would be if the people ever discovered what had happened to their money. It is the responsibility of honest government to ensure that the money system serve the nation and not enslave the nation. We can be self-governing only when public servants are dependent on something citizens provide. When gold and silver coin were used as money, the people had control over their government. The golden rule of finance is that he who has the gold makes the rules. If the public has the gold, the public makes the rules. If the central government and central bank have the gold, they make the rules. The loss of the right to trade in wealth, such as gold and silver coin, enslaves the people to those who create and control what is being used as money. All it took to enslave America and the world